Iqbal's Way by Charlotte K. Gordon. Chapter 1. No Other Way. It was 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The woman and the boy stood patiently in the bright sunlight. Flies buzzed in the air around them. The man sat in the shade of the porch in front of his factory. He finished his cup of sweet tea and lit a cigarette before speaking to the woman. "How much do you need?" he asked. 600 rupees, sir," she said, looking at the ground. A rupee is the unit of money in Pakistan. 600 rupees are about $12. The woman was poor. For her, 600 rupees was a fortune. "What for?" the man asked. "What do you want the money for?" "My oldest son is getting married," the woman said. "We need money for the wedding." In Pakistan, even among the poorest people, it is a great shame not to have a wedding feast, and a feast costs a lot of money. "I see," the man said. "And if I lend you the money, how are you going to pay me back?" "This is my other son," the woman said, looking at the boy. "He will work in your carpet factory. He will pay you back with the money he earns. His name is Iqbal." "He's very small," the man said. "How old is he?" "He is 4 years old, the woman replied. The man nodded. Then he said, "That means that he doesn't know the work. I will have to teach him. I can pay him only 1 rupee a week. Do you agree to that?" "Yes, Mr. Arshad," the woman said. "That is very generous of you. Thank you very much." The woman did not want to sell her son to the carpet maker, but she was poor, and in Pakistan there is no other way for a poor person to get money. The next morning before dawn, the woman took Iqbal to the carpet factory. Arshad Mahmood met them at the door and took the boy into the factory. In reality, the factory was only a small, dirty, dusty shed. It had no windows. The only light came from 2 light bulbs hanging from the ceiling. The small boy looked around him. He saw 8 strange pieces of equipment. In front of each of them, young children were already working. "These are the looms," Arshad explained to him. "The loom holds the carpet." Heavy white threads ran from the top to the bottom of each loom. Beside each loom was a pile of short pieces of thread of different colours. "Your job," Arshad continued, "is to tie the short pieces of coloured thread to the white threads. Then, when you make a knot, you cut the thread with this." He gave Iqbal a sharp, curved knife. "To make just 1 carpet, you will have to tie more than 1 million small knots. Do you know how big 1 million is? Iqbal didn't answer. He was shy and afraid. He wanted to be home with his mother. "Don't worry," Arshad Mahmood said. "It looks difficult, but you will soon learn." Every morning for the next 6 years, Iqbal rose before dawn and walked through the dark streets to Arshad's factory. He worked 14 or 15 hours a day, 365 days a year, with only a half-hour break for lunch. He didn't think this was unusual. He knew no other way. At first, Iqbal thought that Arshad was a kind man, but soon he changed his mind. Arshad did not allow the children to speak to each other while they were working. "If I let you talk," he told them, "you will start making mistakes. And when you make mistakes, I lose money." When Arshad heard the children talking, he beat them with a kangi, a heavy steel comb. One day, a little boy who worked in the factory was ill. His name was Shafiq. He was lying in his bed at home with a high fever. But Arshad went to Shafiq's house and pulled him out of bed. He dragged him through the streets to the factory. When they were inside, he tied the boy's feet together and hung him upside down from the ceiling. This punishment lasted for 6 hours. "Here," Arshad shouted. I am the one who decides when you will work and when you will be ill. All the children were afraid of Arshad, but Iqbal began to think, this is not right, this is wrong. Sometime later, when Iqbal was 10 years old, Arshad pulled him out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning. We have an urgent job to complete, he told him. You must come to the factory now. I'm tired, Iqbal said. I need to sleep. You can sleep when I tell you that you can sleep, Arshad said, and he dragged Iqbal to the factory. When Iqbal resisted, Arshad beat him. The next day, instead of going to work, Iqbal went to the police station. He told the police captain, a man called Ghulam Bari, that Arshad beat him. He showed Ghulam the black marks on his arms and back. But the police captain only laughed. He caught Iqbal by the arm and led him back to the factory. If he tries to escape again, the policeman told Arshad, chain him to his loom. Arshad gave Ghulam some money. Then he beat Iqbal badly and chained him to his loom. He told the other children, if you try to escape, I will burn your fingers in boiling oil. Arshad never gave the children enough food. So, at the age of 10, Iqbal was very small, like a child of 6 or 7. But his hands were rough and covered with scars, and his back was curved like an old man's back because of the years sitting bent over his loom. Also, he could not breathe correctly because of years of breathing the dust in the factory. Arshad told Iqbal, stop trying to escape. The harder you work, the faster you will pay back the money I lent your mother. Then you will be free. So Iqbal worked harder. But then Iqbal's mother became ill. She had to buy expensive medicines. So she had to borrow more money from Arshad. One day Iqbal heard that his debt was now 13,000 rupees. I must find a way to escape, he thought. If I don't find one, I will be a slave forever. Chapter 2. Against the Law. In the summer of 1992, when he was 10 years old, Iqbal heard about a meeting in Muridki, his village. A man called Ehsan Ulla Khan was going to talk about a new law. The new law made it illegal for carpet factories to employ children. Iqbal decided that he must go to this meeting. In summer, the temperature in Arshad's factory rose to 120 degrees Fahrenheit, about 50 degrees centigrade. But there were no windows and no fans in the factory, so it was like working in an oven. On the day of the meeting, Iqbal was exhausted when he finished his work. Even so, he walked through the streets to the place of the meeting. He pushed his way to the front of the crowd and sat down on the floor in front of the platform where Ehsan Khan was speaking. Khan told the people about the new law. He said, in the carpet industry in Pakistan, 500,000 children are working as slaves. Now this is illegal. It is against the law. But still it continues. Why? Because the carpet masters do not obey the new law. They are rich and powerful people, and they pay the police to look the other way. We must force the police to respect the law. We must force the carpet masters to obey the law. We must stop child slavery in Pakistan. When Khan finished speaking, he went with his microphone towards some of the young people who were listening to him. He knew that the words of children could move the adults. Then he saw Iqbal. He saw that Iqbal was very small and thin, that his back was curved and that he breathed with difficulty, like an old man. He offered him the microphone. At first, Iqbal was shy. He didn't want to speak. But then he stood up and took the microphone. My name is Iqbal Masih, he said. Then he spoke for more than an hour, describing his life in the factory. He told the people about the repetitive work, tying knots day after day, year after year. He told them about the terrible conditions, about the punishments, about the debt that never stopped increasing. The people listened to him in deep silence. Ihsan Khan knew immediately that Iqbal was special. A bright flame burned in him. The boy spoke clearly and in a language that everyone could understand. Khan saw that Iqbal's story moved the adults. At that moment he knew that he could use Iqbal to explain the tragedy of the child slaves of Pakistan to the rest of the world. After the meeting, Khan told Iqbal, "I want you to come to Lahore with me." Lahore is the largest city in Pakistan, about 25 kilometers from Meridki. "I will find a place for you in a school. You must learn to read and write. You are an intelligent boy and you are brave. I think that we can help each other." Khan gave Iqbal a piece of paper. He said, "This is a copy of the new law. Show it to our Shad and he will have to free you." The next morning, Iqbal went to the carpet factory as usual. But he did not take his place at the loom. Instead, he told Arshad, "This is the new law made by the Parliament of Pakistan. It says that I don't have to work for you anymore. I am free now. I don't owe you anything." Arshad's face became red with anger. He swore at Iqbal. Then he dragged him outside the factory and started to beat him. But Iqbal escaped from him and ran away. Ihsan Khan paid some money to Iqbal's mother every month so that she could pay back Arshad. "Don't worry about Iqbal," he told her. "I will treat him like my own son." So Iqbal started school in Lahore. He was an excellent student, curious about everything. He had a thirst for knowledge and never stopped asking questions. He always had a book with him. In bed, he read late into the night. He told his teachers that he wanted to become a lawyer. He wanted rights. He did not want other children to suffer like him. He completed 4 years of schoolwork in 2 years. He could not believe how lucky he was. But he knew that other children were not as lucky as him. Many did not hear about the new law, and the factory bosses refused to obey it. They gave money to the police, and the police looked the other way. In his spare time, Iqbal started travelling with Ihsan Khan. They went to meetings in marketplaces, in schools, in factories. Iqbal was no longer shy. Everywhere he went, he told the people, "Unite against your oppressors. Stop child slavery in Pakistan." In his home village, Iqbal told his friends that they didn't have to stay with their bosses. He went to many different factories and spoke to the children there, telling them about the new law. Hundreds and then thousands of children in the Meridki region left the factories. Near the end of that year, some people from Swedish television came to Lahore. They wanted to make a documentary about the carpet industry. Iqbal appeared in the film. He spoke about the suffering of hundreds of thousands of Pakistani and Indian children working in carpet factories like Arshad's. He told them about the carpet mafia, the rich and powerful men who control the industry and who refuse to respect the law. At the end of the film, he said, "Now I am not afraid of my boss. It is my boss who is afraid of me." Chapter 3. Tell the World. People saw the Swedish documentary not only in Sweden, but in many other countries of the world. In England, in Germany, in France, in the United States. Everywhere people saw it, it made a strong impression. Many people thought that slavery ended in the 19th century. The film showed them that it still existed. The only difference between 19th century slavery and modern slavery was that now slaves were cheaper than ever before. In the 19th century, America, a slave cost at least $1,000. At the end of the 20th century, a slave like Iqbal cost less than $25. When they saw who was making the beautiful carpets in their homes, many people didn't want to buy them anymore. As a result of the film, sales of Pakistani carpets fell in 1992, 1993 and 1994. The carpet masters were furious. During this period, Iqbal became more and more famous. He spoke to huge crowds in India and Pakistan. He told parents not to sell their children to people like Arshad Mahmood. He told adult workers to unite and fight for better conditions. At the end of 1994, he won the Reebok Youth in Action Prize, a prize for young people working for human rights. Reebok invited Iqbal to come to the United States to receive the prize. "This is our big chance," Ihsan told Iqbal. "Now we can tell people in the West what is happening here. Most of the people who buy Pakistani carpets live in the United States and Europe. So we must try to influence public opinion in those places. You are only a child, but you know what suffering is. That will make a good story for Western newspapers. It will touch people's imagination. We must tell them not to buy carpets made by children. That is the only way to change the situation." On his way to the United States, Iqbal stopped in Stockholm. He visited schools and labour organisations. Newspaper and television reporters followed him everywhere. He told them, "Children should not be in factories 15 hours a day. They should be in school or playing with their friends. My dream is that one day there will be a school in my village and that every child will be free and educated." While he was in Stockholm, French television reporters took Iqbal to a large carpet store. They filmed him sitting on top of a pile of expensive carpets. Iqbal spoke to the camera saying, "I would like to give you a message. Young children make these carpets. They work like slaves in terrible conditions day after day. Half of them die before they are 12 years old. You can do something to stop child slavery in Pakistan. It is simple. Don't buy these carpets. Don't pay the carpet masters for the blood of children." The owner of the carpet store made a video of the French television programme. He sent the video to one of the carpet masters in Lahore with the message, "This child is hurting our business. Someone has to stop him." But for the moment, Iqbal continued his journey. His visit to the United States was even more successful than his visit to Sweden. From the moment he arrived in Boston, he became one of those heroes that the American media and public opinion love. Television cameras were everywhere. Everyone wanted to interview him. Iqbal's message was always the same. He said, "We live in a global economy. Don't buy carpets made by children. That will put pressure on the carpet masters and on the Pakistani government. That is the only way to change things." On December 2, 1994, Iqbal visited the Broad Meadows School near Boston to meet with children of his own age. When Iqbal arrived, the pupils were very surprised. He was so small that when he sat in their chairs, his feet didn't reach the floor. Yet his back was curved and his hands were as rough as an old man's. When he told them about his life, the children of the school were deeply moved. Meanwhile, in Lahore, several newspapers published articles about Iqbal and photographs of him receiving his prize and speaking at Boston University. The carpet masters read the articles. "Enough is enough," they said. "Because of this boy, we are losing money, and every day the situation is becoming worse. Someone has to stop him." Chapter 4. Iqbal's Way. The story of Iqbal does not have a happy ending. When he came back from the United States, everyone knew who he was. He continued to study as before and to speak at meetings with Ihsan Khan. But now he began to receive threats from the carpet masters. They told him, "You think you are very important, but the world will not stop turning if something happens to you." They told his mother, "If your son comes back to Maridki, we will kill him." In public, of course, they were more careful about what they said. Why did Iqbal not come to us before and tell us about these problems in his factory, if there were really any problems? If these problems exist, we must do something to change them. It's true that children work in the carpet factories. Everyone knows that. But nobody forces them to work there. Nobody forces parents to sell their children. And isn't it better to have a job and something to eat than to have no job and be hungry? On April the 16th, 1995, Iqbal went to church. It was Easter Sunday and he was visiting his uncle and aunt in the country. Iqbal and his family were Christians, and for them this was one of the most important days of the year. They had a large meal using the best plates and glasses and wearing their best clothes. After the meal, Iqbal spent some time talking with his aunt. Then he and two of his cousins went to take some food to his uncle, who was still working in the fields. The three boys were riding on one bicycle, laughing and joking as they went along the country road. It was 8 o'clock in the evening and already dark, but a full moon was climbing high in the sky. Suddenly, there were two shots. 120 pellets hit Iqbal, killing him instantly. The other boys were unhurt. The police arrived almost immediately and took Iqbal's cousins to the police station. The police captain, Ghulam Bari, arrested a field labourer called Muhammad Ashraf for the murder. The police tortured the man. They hung him upside down from the ceiling of the police station and beat him with canes and leather belts. "You will confess to Iqbal's murder," Ghulam Bari told him. "You are poor and worth nothing. Nobody cares what we do to you. If you don't confess, we'll kill you." Muhammad Ashraf confessed. The police then threatened to torture Iqbal's two cousins. "You must sign this paper," Ghulam Bari told them. "It says that you saw Muhammad Ashraf shoot Iqbal." The two boys signed the paper. For 4.5 years, people everywhere in the world thought that Iqbal's killer was Muhammad Ashraf. Only Ihsan Khan said that the carpet mafia was responsible. He said it again and again, but he had no proof. Then, in September 1999, a Swedish film revealed the truth. It was a man called Ali Hussein who killed Iqbal. Ali Hussein worked for the carpet masters. Iqbal's cousins changed their story. They said, "We lied because we were afraid of Ghulam Bari. The night of the murder, it was Ali Hussein that we saw." Iqbal's death provoked international protests. Hundreds of people marched in the streets of the United States, Sweden, France, Germany, Australia, and many other countries. 3,000 people marched through the streets of Lahore, protesting about the murder and calling for a ban on the sale of carpets made by children. The Pakistani government promised to make a full investigation. But it is one thing to make promises, another thing to act. The corrupt Pakistani police did nothing to catch Iqbal's real killer. And the world is still waiting for a full investigation. For many children, Iqbal was an inspiration. He gave thousands of them the courage to follow him out of slavery. He was only 12 years old when the carpet mafia killed him. But in his short lifetime, he became a voice for freedom and justice, a voice raised against greed and exploitation. Iqbal's way was not the easy way, but he showed that one person, even one small child, can make a difference. The children of Broadmeadows School raised $100,000 to establish a school in Iqbal's village. They bought a building and hired teachers. They found 50 families whose children were slaves and bought the children back from their masters. In the years following Iqbal's death, the carpet masters spent millions of dollars on publicity and lies, cleaning their public image. Now the sales of their carpets are rising again. In the United States, a high-quality, hand-knotted Pakistani carpet sells for about $2,000. In Pakistani today, more than 500,000 children between the ages of 4 and 14 still work full-time in the carpet industry as Iqbal did. Child labour is still illegal, But even so, 12 million Pakistani children will never see a blackboard or a playground. Instead, they will spend their days in carpet factories, brick factories, glass factories, steel factories, match factories, garages and restaurants. They will leave their innocence there and their health. Their owners will beat them and abuse them and buy them and sell them like cattle. Half of these children will die before they reach the age of 12. Around the world, over 250 million children are slaves. About 150 million of them are in Asia, 80 million are in Africa, and 17 million are in Latin America. Iqbal's way was to speak out against this cruel injustice, even at the risk of his life. Who will speak out against it now?